Death Roll, written by Sam Llewellyn and read by Michael Jaston.
Chapter 1. The voice in my ear shouted, "Tack now!" It was thin and tinny, the voice, because it was coming 2,000 vertical feet to the VHF receiver in the pocket of my shorts. "Wait," I said, into the throat mic that constricted my neck, but left my hands free for Pollux's leather-covered wheel. Silence fell, except for the rattle of the helicopter in the blue Australian sky above the glistening white tower of the sails and the whoosh and plunge of the big aluminium hull. I enjoyed it. There are few silences when you're working a 12-meter up to the point where it will sail in the elimination races for the America's Cup. Those there are tense and full of hard thought. The man beside me broke the silence. "What about it?" he said. I glanced astern and to starboard. Across 200 feet of glittering blue sea, the claret-red bow of Castor sliced into a blue wave and kicked water back at her foredeck man, wrestling the head of a sail into the groove of the forestay. The foredeck man was called Bill Rogers, and the sun was shining in the sweat on his face. He did not look well. Before the race, he had told me he had flu. But the men who ran the Constellation Challenge did not see flu as a reason for staying ashore. "Wait," I said. I could feel the tension coming off the men, 10 of them, sweating under the Sydney sun in the aluminium box of the hull. A 12-meter is not the ballerina of the sea that yachting journalists would like you to believe. It has more in common with a tank than a ballerina. 25 tons of metal, hugely overpowered, built for battle. "Go!" screamed the voice in my ear. I squinted up into the bright sky. The helicopter was flying backwards. It contained Geoffrey Lampson, the coach. He would be creased and red and sweating, gnawing his unlit pipe because far below on the wrinkled metal shield of the water, the pawns were not doing as they were told. "Pollux!" squawked the voice again. "Tack now!" I looked again. Castor's foredeck was a billowing mass of mylar sail. Bill Rogers was battering it down. He looked sluggish, off balance. "Now." "Go," I said, and spun the wheel. Pollux's deck came level under my feet as her nose turned through the wind. The fat aluminium boom clanked across. The Genoa slid smoothly round the front of the mast, and a spatter of spray sailed aft as she leaned again, to starboard this time, and shot across Castor's bows. I saw Roger's mouth open, a dark O in his yellowish, sweating face. Then he flung himself flat on the deck, into the billows of the unset sail, as Castor turned after us, and the Genoa swept across the foredeck like a great mylar squeegee. "Caught him on the hop," said the tactician with a grin. "Good!" squawked Lamson's voice in my ear, claiming the credit for my timing. "Worked very well! Keep her on that tack!" I was sweating with heat and tension and anger at the chittering from the mechanical insect hovering above me. "Let's tack," I said. The winches jingled and we tacked again, back onto starboard. The gap of water between the boats was 300 feet now. Lamson's voice yammered in my ear. I tried not to listen. Paul Welsh, Castor's helmsman, was shouting. He sounded nervous, which was fine. I kept my eye on the gap between our transom and Castor's bow. We had won the start and kept him covered. Now, inch by inch, we were moving away. Castor and Pollux were owned by the Constellation Challenge. For 6 weeks now, we had been trial-horsing against each other out here in the blue Tasman Sea, and for 6 weeks, I had been getting more and more depressed. To put together a 12-meter challenge, you need to find a lot of money, and some managers who know how to organize the spending of the money on a couple of boats, and some people who will sail the boats fast. In a good syndicate, making the boat go is the object of the exercise, and there will be no nasty little secrets. But the Constellation Challenge was being run by His Lordship of Honiton, a pillar of the ludicrously smart Pall Mall Yacht Club, who would not have recognized democracy if it had turned up at luncheon on a bed of rice. Honiton ran an international management consultancy and a medium-sized property empire. Nasty secrets were as essential to him as oxygen. He had appointed Geoffrey Lampson as coach, and Lampson had gone out and hired the crews. I had been doubtful about joining up.